Okay. Today I'll speak about kidneyot, but first I just want a little bit about matzah. Some of you were zocher to bake matzah. What's the concept of matzah shmura? So the truth is, matzah shmura is a machlokas rishon, and the Gemara Psakim Daf Mem, Rava says, he says to the people that are harvesting the wheat, tying up the bundles, he says to him, ki mahapichito hefichu l'shum mitzvah. When you turn it or bundle it or pile it, you should do it for the sake of the mitzvah. Okay? So some Rishonim, also the Shiltot, understood that you have to have kavana l'shem mitzvah, for the mitzvah of achilat matzah. That's how Rashi also understands it. Rashi says that kol mitzvah, it says shal mitzvah shimur l'shma be'inan. You need a shimur l'shem mitzvah. The Rosh passes that way. The Ran passes that way. That you need shimur l'shem mitzvah. The Rif and the Rambam, however, had a different girsa. That Rava didn't tell them to do it l'shem mitzvah, but rather l'shum matzah. And the concept is to be shimu l'shum matzah means to watch that it doesn't become chametz. In other words, he was telling the people who are processing the wheat, gathering the wheat and processing the wheat, to be careful that it should be done for matzah, meaning make sure that it doesn't become chametz. So what comes out from this machloket, that might be based on the difference of a girsa, is really two separate points. One, do you have to do the various processing, and then there's other dayot that not just the cutting, but also the lisha, the kneading of the dough, and then some say not only the kneading of the dough, but even to put it into the oven. Does it have to be done l'shma l'shem mitzvah? And obviously, anybody who went to a matzah factory knows that they say l'shem matzah mitzvah at any stage of the way. According to the Rambam, it doesn't have to be done. In other words, according to the Rambam, you don't have to have kavanah l'shma at all during the baking process, according to the Rambam and the Rif, and it would be kosher shmura matzahs. So that's one machlokas. Do you have to have a kavanah l'shma when you're doing these various actions? The other machloket is that according to the Rif and the Rambam, all matzah, not only matzah's mitzvah, but all matzah has to have shimur. Shimur against chimutz. In other words, according to the Rambam, a person is not allowed to consume matzah that the flour wasn't guarded from water from the time it was detached from the ground. If it wasn't guarded, against the water from the time it was detached from the ground, then you wouldn't be allowed to consume it. Okay? Masha'enke and other Rishonim would say that as long as you don't know for a fact that water fell on it, so then the wheat or the flour or whatever the case may be is kosher Pesach. Okay, perhaps you wouldn't use it for shmura matzah, but you would use it for regular matzah. According to the Rambam, there is no such thing as regular matzah. According to the Rambam, it's either shmura matzah or it's not kosher Pesach matzah. And that's why you might find individuals who are makbid that they don't bring into their home anything but shmura matzah. Okay, that's the sheet of the Rambam and the Rif. Okay, the briskas were generally makbid on that, on this sheet as Rambam. And so you have people that only eat shmura matzah. It's not a crazy chumah, it's just a chumah. Okay? secondly, I want to talk a little bit about machine matzo. I didn't speak about machine matzo last week, did I? No. Okay. Machine matzo the controversy around machine matzos started from the very beginning, from the very first time they started to automate part of the process of the baking of the matzo. I think it started in 1838. That was like the earliest point, but the truth is, in 1838, it wasn't really what we call fully automated matzahs the way factories make it today. It meant that a certain process, part of the process, either the kneading or the rolling, or the cutting, or some part of the process was done by a machine rather than by a man. And that's when the whole controversy started. What were the claims against machine matzahs? The biggest claim was that once you're talking about parts of a machine that had intricate moving parts, so cleaning the machinery in a proper way was extremely difficult, and therefore, you know, the people against machine matzahs, the poskim that were against machine matzahs, felt that they weren't kosher Pesach because of all the cracks and there's no way to clean it properly. Those who counter argument would be that, you know, when you're using metal parts, it could be smooth. You could shut down the entire machinery and kosher it over and burn out all the parts, you know, all the parts properly with a blowtorch. Nowadays, machine matzahs, there are two kinds of machine matzahs. One is regular machine matzah, and one is what they call chai regoim, or 18-minute machine matzahs. 18-minute matzahs doesn't mean that they're baked before 18 minutes, because obviously that would make all the matzahs not kosher. All matzah has to be baked before 18 minutes. But 18-minute matzahs meant that the machinery, the whole system is shut down, brought to a standstill, and people would come in, you know, with various cleaning equipment, be it, I don't know, blow torches or brushes or caustic soda or whatever the different type of things that they use to clean it, and they would clean it, and then they would start to run again for 18 minutes. Okay? So those are the two type of matzahs that are available. Another claim that some of you might have touched on when you did the sugya of Chereshot V'Katan by Lishma is that according to most Rishonim, the matzah, the process of the baking and the kneading, etc., the matzah has to be done Lishma, L'shem Matzah's Mitzvah, right? And it's very hard for a machine to have Kavana Lishma, right? So the ones that were for basically felt that pressing a button and starting the entire process, the person who presses a button could have Kavana Lishma. And that would be, you know, considered a Kavana Lishma. And the machine is just an extension of the person or a tool of the person, just like you could say a rolling pin perhaps is a tool of the person, where the rolling pin doesn't have a mind of his own, but is being, you know, pushed by the person. So here too, we're pressing a button, and true, the power is not coming from human power, but that doesn't mean that the person can't have Lishma. Rav Lichtenstein uses machine matzahs. Last I checked, he uses Shmura machine matzahs for his Leil HaSeder, and Bechal uses, you know, Shmura machine matzahs. And
18-minute machine matzahs?
Yeah, yeah. Usually when you're talking about, usually, as far as I know, anytime it's Shmura, it probably is 18 minutes. It doesn't necessarily have to be, but it just usually coincides. Another claim against machine matzahs was that in order to have real shimur against chimutz, you have to be able, a human eye should be able to watch every single process or step of the way, and with machines perhaps that wouldn't be possible. Now, over time, the machines became better and better at doing this job. In other words, the cleaning of the machine was designed in a better way, that a lot of these claims, the claims that were 100 years old, are less applicable today. There was another some poskim claimed that in order for matzah to be kosher, you had to work it with your hands. In other words, our mesorah, that it only takes 18 minutes for it to become chametz, is only if it's being worked by human hands. Once it's no longer being worked by human hands, we don't really know how long it takes to for chimutz. Another claim against machine matzahs was that the machinery gets heated up and raises the temperature of the dough, and once the temperature of the dough is raised,
the human hands to slow it or
to work it to be to
slow it or speed it up. I mean,
to retard the fermentation.
So
slowing it down.
How do you know it slows it down? That speeds it up.
I think
the oil's in the hand.
I think the claim is that our Masorah, that it takes 18 minutes, is under certain normal circumstances. And working the dough, they believed, you know, slowed the fermentation. Another claim I said was the machinery, the older machinery for sure, had a tendency of heating up sometimes. The metal would become hot, heating up the dough. or you have an assembly line, a belt, a conveyor belt, slowly bringing the matzah into the oven. So as it came close to the oven, it would be in the vicinity of the oven, it would start to get hot before actually being baked. All these type of technical issues, I think, are already solved with today's machine matzahs. There was even a claim that machine matzahs have to be puzzle because traditionally matzahs are round and not square. So we chuckle, but that's one of the truvis. They say that that's, you know, that puzzles the matzah. Another claim against machine matzahs is that it's going to create unemployment. That there were people... There were people that, you know, gained a good part of their livelihood over the year working, you know, to bake matzahs by hand, and if everything becomes automated, so those people will lose their jobs.
They could,
right, you could pay them the same price to push the button. That's true. So traditionally, the people, the poskim that stand out that said that machine matzahs are usur were the Chazon Ish, or Shlomo Kluger, the Rogatchover, the Imre Bina, but again, it's quite possible that some of these poskim, if they would be alive today and see the machinery that's around today, some of them might back off on the issue. It's not 100% clear. Those poskim that said clearly that they felt it was mutter was Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal, Rav Mashash, who was the Rav Rashi of Yerushalayim, Rav Adi Yosef and Rav Mordechai Eliyahu Zatzal, of the opinion that machine matzahs are okay, but they prefer that hand matzahs are preferable. Okay, any questions? Yes?
I'm under the impression that I believe it's Yekim say that it's better to use machine matzah because there's no hashash of having pockets of dough being cooked within the circular matzahs that are handmade.
There's definitely more efficiency in the machine matzah in many ways, but you know, I personally agree with that. But you can't go ahead and say that hand matzahs, you know, therefore are chametz. That's like saying Moshe Rabbeinu ate chametz. That can't be. Yes. Okay. All right. That's it. That's it for the matzahs. Now we move on to kitniot. Kitniot, in many ways, symbolizes Pesach because it's like this minhag that's kind of like gone wild, so to speak. Maybe it symbolizes just Jewish tradition in many ways. But I think it's important to get to the bottom of the whole issue of kitniot, and I think come to a better realization where there's, you know, it's proper to be machmir and where it's not proper to be machmir. The background of kitniot is the following. The Gemara in Pesachim Lamed Hey quotes a machloket between Chachamim and Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. It brings up the Mishnah that Chachamim say only the five minim could become chametz, while Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri felt that orez, rice, is a type of dagon, is considered a type of, I guess, I don't know, grain that would be considered chametz. Chachamim disagree, and the Gemara explains the difference between rice and the other five species of wheat, in that rice just comes to sirachon. Sirachon means to spoil, okay? While a dough made out of the five minim actually rises or goes becomes to chimutz.
What about the quinoa?
I'll get to quinoa. If I don't, remind me.
In that case.
Okay, now in the chemistry of rice as opposed to the five types of grain, the basic chemistry is that rice is missing gluten. Okay, you've heard of gluten? Okay. Rice is missing gluten. Gluten is a type of protein that has a glue type of property. It gives the glue to the dough, so to speak, that gives it the ability to catch the pockets of carbon dioxide that the yeast cells are giving off while they're partying and reproducing, okay? And the gluten catches those little bubbles, and that's ultimately what creates the rise of the, right, of the dough. And if you were to try to do the same thing with rice, it doesn't have that glue property, and therefore the bubbles just basically go through, and the dough doesn't rise. Now, the minhag of refraining from eating rice or eating or of kidney or in general clearly doesn't come from the Gemara. And the Gemara spells out straight out that there is no issue whatsoever of chametz when it comes to rice or anything else for that matter. The earliest mention of the minhag is in the Sefer HaManhigim, which was written around the year 1100. The Sefer Mitzvot Katan, written by Rimi Kurbil, approximately 1200, quotes the fact that there is a mitzvah from refraining from eating certain types of beans. Okay? And he tries to give an explanation to the minhag. In other words, he's kind. You could see if you look at the tshuva, the smak Sefer Mitzvah Katan. I didn't write down the simon here. It is kedai to look at to find it. I'll try to find it if anybody wants to read it inside. He tries to explain an existing phenomenon. In other words, it's clear that he was not being gozer. He was saying there is this minhag, you know, this new minhag or whatever it is, this minhag not to eat certain beans or what have you. And what could the possible reason be? Because it clearly is not a problem of chametz. So he comes up with four theories. And it's clear from his lashon that they're only theories. In other words, he's trying to explain an existing minhag, trying to come up with a svara. So one svara he comes up with is that these kitniot could be used in a maisa kadeira. Maisa kadeira is ultimately like cholent. Okay? They could be made in a type of a porridge or a maisa kadeira, just like wheat and barley, whatever, is made into a maisa kadeira. And therefore, there's a chash that they might be switched for wheat. The second svara he comes up is that these things are stored, they're midgan, meaning they're stored as grain. And again, it was a chash that they might be switched for wheat. The third reason he gives is that it's possible to make a certain type of bread from it, and therefore, again, a chash that they'll be switched, meaning that they grind it into a type of a flour, and they try to make some kind of a bread, and therefore, perhaps it'll be switched. And fourthly, other achronim, not the smak, gives a fourth reason. Other achronim give a fourth reason that at times the kitniot grown fields that have wheat sometimes popping up in between, either because of previous crops, but wheat sometimes stalks pop up in between the kitniot, and when they're harvested, so the kitniot are harvested together with a certain amount of wheat. Now, Rabbi Yechiel Miparis, also one of the Bali Tosfot, who is the Rebbe of the smak, as a matter of fact, wrote that he used to eat white beans on Pesach, but he wouldn't eat orez. He wouldn't eat rice. That's Rabbi Yechiel Miparis. On the other hand, you have the Or Zeruah, who was towards the end of the Tkufa of the Bali Tosfot, said that the whole idea of the kitniot is a minak shtut.
Where's that?
The Or Zeruah calls it a minak shtut. Okay, the Shulchan Aruch was not choshesh for the whole minak of kitniot, and that's why Sfardim have it easier in this respect on Pesach. The Ramah writes, I quote, Anu b'nei Ashkenazim nahagu l'hachmir. Okay, Ashkenazim are noheg to be machmir on the issue of kitniot. Now, the next question I'd like to tackle is what exactly is defined as kitniot. Now, within poskim, I would say achronim, there are two different directions in how to define what is in the family of kitniot and what is not. The first direction is to take the reasons that the smak gave, the Sefer Mitzvot Katana gave, take that reasoning, and any type of a bean or grain or anything that fits that reasoning should therefore fall into the category of kitniot. The other direction is to say no, that the smak was just trying to explain why a particular minhag of not eating, let's say, rice existed. And he wasn't trying to say that anything that has any of these three or four properties should be asur. Okay? As an example, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, who was a Rav Rashi of Yerushalayim, he's also Rav Amital Zatzal's Rebbe, He has a whole deal about peanuts. Okay? And he goes through the various reasons, you know, for and against, and he comes to the conclusion that peanuts should be mutter. Even though peanuts are perhaps be considered a type of legume or type of a bean, and even though maybe peanuts could be made into a type of a flour, and maybe peanut, you know, and peanuts are stored as grain, and in other words, they fell under some of the reasons that the smak gave for the whole minhag of kitniot. But Tzvi Pesach Frank says that again, the minhag of kitniot only applies to things that were noheg, that the Klai Yisrael had a minhag not to eat on Pesach. And the smak was basically explaining an existing minhag of refraining from rice, why with what's the svara. He therefore comes to conclusion that peanuts should be mutter, but in the end he says, nonetheless, the minhag in Yushlaim is not to eat peanuts on Pesach, and therefore he backs off in the last minute. A person who goes through the same process, but doesn't back off the last minute, is Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva. In America, there was a point where they didn't have a supply of oil to use for Pesach, and Rav Moshe, I think it was like the 1950s or 60s, Rav Moshe wrote a whole tshuva, coming to the conclusion, again, that the smak's reasoning was just rationale to explain the pre-existing minhag, but the rule of kitniot is that if you have a particular grain or bean or legume that you know, a community did not eat, then they have a minhag not to eat those things. But something that didn't have any type of masorah of not eating doesn't fall under the category of kitniot and therefore could be eaten, and that's how he paskins that you're allowed to eat peanuts. Even though Rav Moshe Feinstein was considered the Gadol Hador and clearly the Posek of America, as far as I know, his psak when it comes to peanuts did not catch on other than those few years that they used peanut oil. There are some people that still use peanut oil, but not that many in America. I remember once, many, many years ago, 25 years ago, reading this tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein, I became convinced that this, you know, the whole thing is like ridiculous, that you know, kitniot, wherever you know egg, but there's clearly no reason to expand the minhag into other things that are not included. And I decided that I was going to eat, you know, peanuts for the first time in my life on Pesach. And in Israel, in America, you can't find a heksher on peanuts, but in Israel, because of Svardim, so you could find a heksher on peanuts. And I went and bought some peanuts in a shell, and I brought them home. And like it was Pesach morning, you know, I took out my Gemara and I took out my peanuts, and I prepared myself, you know, to have some Oneg Yom Tov, and I cracked open the peanut and I brought the peanut close to my mouth, ready to make a bracha, and I just couldn't bring myself to do it. And I put it back in the bag and I rolled up just put it away for after Pesach, and I didn't eat it. A few years after that, I asked my father whether he remembers in Europe whether they had a minhag of eating or not eating peanuts, and he says, I don't remember these things. Ask your aunt, my sister, meaning his sister. And so I asked my aunt, and my aunt says, I remember very, very clearly, we did not eat peanuts on Pesach because I loved peanuts, and I remember crying and carrying on a lot, mm-hmm. Asking my father, why can't I have peanuts? And he would not allow me, and we didn't eat peanuts. So Baruch Hashem. In other words, even following Rav Moshe, because if you have a masorah of not eating, so then that's a proper thing to do. But if you don't have a masorah of not eating, so there's no reason why not to. That's the direction Rav Moshe Feinstein takes. Now, the opposite direction could be represented by the Chai Adam. The Chai Adam was the opinion that you look at the smak, and any reason that he gives, if it covers something else, that is also considered kitniot. So much so, brace yourselves, that the Chai Adam was convinced that potatoes should be usur to consume on Pesach because you can make flour out of them. Okay, and you can make potato noodles out of them.
So then how did you explain using it for
carpal? Okay, and I forgot which Achron wrote to the Chai Adam. I forgot which one, who it was, but there's one Achron that wrote a letter to the Chai Adam saying that potatoes on Pesach are the Chai Adam of Pesach. Meaning that Jews live off potatoes on Pesach, and you can't answer it. But that was his direction. Now, so one nafkamina between these two directions is peanuts. Another nafkamina is soybeans. Soybeans, as far as I know, someone could Wikipedia this if you want to, I don't think it was known in the times of the Achronim to the area to where Jews lived. They didn't know that soybeans existed, so there couldn't have been a minhag of not eating soybeans. Yet, nowadays, in America, Jews don't eat soybeans, I know. And in Israel, generally, Ashkenazim won't eat soybeans. And I think it was just lack of leadership, meaning that there wasn't some gadol that caught it in the beginning of, they just said beans, you know, beans, it looks like a bean, and they didn't eat it, following maybe the Chayadim's direction, but according to Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank and Rav Moshe Feinstein's direction, there's no reason why not to eat soybeans. If not the beans, the more important thing in Israel is soybean oil. See, in America, most people use corn oil, which, by the way, one could also argue should not be kidney oat. For the same thing, meaning, I don't know how whether there was a minhag, clear minhag in Europe not to eat corn.
18th century.
What 18th century?
1765.
What?
For when it was introduced into England.
Okay.
Europe.
So it clearly wasn't a minhag in the time of the Rishonim and even the early Achron. Yes. Right. So again, in other words, what I'm trying to say is that it's basically a chakira between the Achronim how to interpret the smak. Okay? And if you go in Rav Moshe Feinstein or Tzvi Pesach Frank's direction, only if you have a clear minhag not to, do you not eat it, so to speak. The third example would be quinoa. Okay? Quinoa was not known to, Western culture until I don't know how many years ago. You could Wikipedia that as well, if you want. Quinoa is a type of, I don't know what it is. What would be classified as? It's not a rice. It's not rice. Someone told me that the plant actually looks like a spinach plant. Huh? And the quinoa is the seed of this plant. Huh? Pardon me? It's a grass. Okay. Technically, one could claim that wheat is a grass and rice is a grass and corn is a grass, botanically speaking. But anyways, so again, following the rules of Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, so quinoa should be okay. And following the direction of the Chayadim, it shouldn't be okay. Now, personally, I personally feel that the general rule is Safek Derabanan Lekula, and this is less than a Derabanan because it's not even clear. No, this is not a Gezer. This is not a Gezer Derabanan. I don't think there was a time where somebody gave a clap and said stop eating it. It was just something that was developed. We don't have anything on record that some particular Rishon said stop eating kidney or stop eating rice. It just he said, Rav Yechilmei Paris was knowing not to eat rice, and the smak is not even clear what he did. All he said, all he was describing was some kind of a minhag that existed.
No,
so,
minhag is of dinner now.
But there's no minhag by quinoa.
Where's the
quinoa.
There's no minhag of quinoa, and therefore, in my opinion, a person should be able to eat quinoa. The only issue is that you would have to make sure that the quinoa is clean of any, wheat residue or any other type of a thing like that. I know that the Svardim, as an example, the Svardim that consume rice on Pesach, Rav Gigi told me that they sit down for many, many hours before Pesach and open up the sacks of rice and they go slowly over each grain of rice to make sure that there's not a single grain of wheat, in the rice. They're not somech on just stam, and it's a painstaking thing. So I'm just saying, generally speaking, I think that's an issue. Just a moment. Okay, yeah.
Recently they've been selling on Pesach these rolls and pizza that look exactly like actual bread. Following the logic of the smart bed, it's because I might be confused. But the Chayei Adam say these are usher, or what's the deal with these?
Yeah, again, the Chayei Adam foresaw this. The Chayei Adam foresaw this, and he felt that potato flour, potatoes should be osur. I don't know if he himself didn't eat potatoes. He wrote that using that logic, it should be osur. No, it didn't catch on. I don't think it caught on. Actually, I have one friend whose father came from Baghdad, that picked up this minhag of not eating potatoes or nuts of any kind on Pesach. So there might be people that do that.
It's not potatoes, it's matzah meal.
Oh, using matzah meal?
They're using matzah meal, but they look exactly
I don't think there's anybody alive that... then you'd have to be gozer against Knedelach, and that's not Jewish. You can't be gozer against Knedelach. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu ate Knedelach. Yes?
I don't want to say this question, but what's the best... I understand that we were following the minhag, just kidding, because it's become part of the Sora. But if it's like so apparently clear that, or very, seemingly very clear that the minhag is,
No, what do you mean? There's very few people listen. Only the Oriz Ruah says it's a minhag shtut. Everybody else, nobody else says it's a minhag shtut. You have hundreds and maybe thousands of great gedolim that did not label it as a minhag shtut. You understand? It's not a minhag shtut. The question is, do we have to try to define what, you know, what's the scope of the definition of the kitniot, to limit it or not to limit it? And I'm just saying that if there's a machloka between two camps, the Chai Adam and these other camps, logically, I think a person should be mekil and not try to expand it, but not to eradicate it. Chas v'shalom. I would be very, very careful. A tradition, when it comes to tradition, you don't monkey with tradition. You just don't. You don't start, you know, fiddling with a fiddler. You don't do that. Yeah. I don't think that a person should be eating bean sprouts, because bean sprouts have part of the bean in it, and the minhag is not to eat beans. You know, so I don't think you should be eating bean sprouts. Okay, there's also another category that's seeds. Until now, we were speaking about legumes and beans and things like that. There are seeds. Are seeds considered kitniot? So there's a Taz. The Taz mentions that anise, which is like licorice seeds, and coriander seeds, licorice, anise. He says need to do a good bedikah on them in order to make sure that there's no weed among them. Okay. He also says something else called feld kimmel. Okay, some people call it kimmel. Also is mutter on Pesach. Just you have to make sure that there's no wheat among it. And the reason he gives is because these seeds don't look like wheat, and therefore they wouldn't be mistaken for wheat. That's what the Taz says. On the other hand, the Ramah mentions clearly that chardal, mustard, the minig Ashkenaz is not to eat mustard, and he says, he comes up with a theory, he says maybe it's because chardal grows in pods, and therefore it looks similar to kitniot, and maybe that's why Ashkenazim don't eat it. But the Ramah records that Ashkenazim don't use mustard on Pesach. This is the Ramah. The Ramah is not making a gezerah. The Ramah was not saying don't eat mustard. The Ramah says that Ashkenazim have a minhag of not eating mustard. Therefore, don't eat mustard.
Because there's a minhag not to eat the kitniot.
No. Again, it's similar to the smock. The Ramah says, I know for a fact that there's an old minhag by Ashkenazim not to eat mustard. Maybe it was because of this. But he accepted the minhag because that was a clear minhag. So the minhag of Ashkenazim is not to eat mustard. Excuse me. The Trumas HaDeshen also includes another seed that he records is sesame seeds. Okay, again, Trumas HaDeshen being one of the last Ashkenazi Rishonim. So again, we have listed that sesame should not be consumed by Ashkenazim over Pesach. Why? Because there's a minhag not to. Okay, and what I said before, again, is not coming to be matu these things. You know, these things, there's a clear recorded minhag Ashkenazim don't eat them. So you don't eat them. And why don't you eat them? Because that's your tradition is not to eat them. Yes?
Based on the... that we said about all kidney in general, what about kidney derivatives? Because it seemed that...
I'll get to it. Hopefully I'll get to it. What about kidney out or seeds that they themselves are not ra'u l'achila? they're not roi l'achilat kelev. Okay? Would we extend the issur of kitniot on something that technically wouldn't be considered food? Now, logically, you and I would come to the conclusion that we should be matir, right? However, the Ramah mentions that the Ashkenazim don't eat zera kanvus. Zera kanvus, according to Professor Felix, is referring to cannabis or hemp, and they used to make oil or get oil out of cannabis seed. That's what he mentions, that they wouldn't eat cannabis. Now, again, I think that this Shumas Adeshin and this Ramah about Zera Kanvus is limited to Zera Kanvus, but it doesn't extend to anything else. As an example, cotton seeds is not something that's edible, but you could derive oil from cotton seeds, and I would guess that 90% of the oil consumed on Pesach among American Jews is cottonseed oil. That's what's in. That's what's in now in America. And again, the even though it is a seed, on the other hand, it's not edible, except for the oil itself. Okay, those people that were matir shemen kutna, or cottonseed oil, was the divrei yatziv. That was the sons of Rav, the Kloisenberger Rav, Rav Sipesach Frank, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, Rav Moshe Feinstein. Those were just a list of the people that felt that cottonseed oil is fine, and haraya it caught on in Israel. I mean, caught on in America. In Israel, it's rare to find. In Israel, I think it's because it didn't find a market, and the reason why it didn't find a market is because the Haredim wouldn't buy it. They wouldn't buy cottonseed oil because it comes from seeds. Anything that comes from seeds, the Haredim won't buy. As a matter of fact, they won't consume. The only type of oil that Haredim would consume are oil that comes from things that grow from trees, like olive oil or walnut oil or almond oil. Those are the oils that Haredim use in order to be machmir l'chol adayot. But again, American Jews use shemen kutna. Even the Haredim in America, I think, use shemen kutna, and I don't know anybody who's machmir. A more recent arrival in the oil area, relatively recent, I think it's like 60 or 70 years old, is canola oil or rapeseed oil. Rapeseed is botanically, not important what family comes from botanically. It's a non-edible oil. It's non-edible. In other words, the oil that came out of it for a long, long time was used for machine oil because it couldn't be eaten because it was a type of acid that was in the oil that rendered it not edible. And something like 60 years ago, and you could Wikipedia it if you want, something like 60 years ago they came up with a process that was able to remove this inedible acid from the oil and thus making it edible. Not only is it edible, but it's supposed to be extremely healthy. Canola oil is supposed to be able to lower your cholesterol like olive oil does, etc. And it's very in now in Israel, canola oil. And there's a big machloket, even within a long shvut, there's some families that will use canola oil on Pesach. I think Rav Yatz tells his kehila not to use canola oil on Pesach. And then there are other families, like my family, that use canola oil religiously on Pesach. Another thing that comes out of canola oil is lecithin, and it's an emulsifier that they the truth is that lecithin, an emulsifier, could be gotten either from soy beans or from canola, you know, from rape seeds. The lecithin that they get out of rape seeds, in Hebrew they call it liftit. Sometimes you'll see a chocolate bar that will say on a kosher Pesach lochlei liftit. Okay, liftit is an emulsifier that doesn't come from soybeans but rather comes from canola oil. Okay. Again, Haredim and many other people again won't eat any of these things. I think that a person definitely could be makel in these areas, provided that the hashkacha is a good hashkacha. Okay. There's a shud avnei nezer, and this is probably why Rav Yatz Rimon is machmer. There's a shud avnei nezer that said rapeseed oil is osur because of the din of kitniot. But then a couple of years later, came out with a different psak that if they were to boil the seeds before they process them, thus making it impossible for it to become chametz on a theoretical level, he thinks there's room to be makel. Even though he would never say such a thing by regular kitniot, but here he felt that there's room to be makel. Now, there are some poskim that want to differentiate between the kitniot themselves and what they call make kitniot, or things that come out of kitniot. And some poskim say, okay, you know, kitniot itself we won't eat, but make kitniot, oil coming from kitniot, that's okay to eat. I believe Rav Kook was one of those that felt that make kitniot is room to be makel. In other words, okay, so you don't eat a bean, or you don't eat rice, or you won't eat corn, and you won't eat soybeans, but the oil that comes out of it, or perhaps the sugar, the corn sugar, corn syrup that comes out of corn, perhaps that you could eat. I personally am not makel in that area of make kitniot, but it's another consideration to be added on. So much so that if some of you are invited, let's say, to a Svardi's home over Pesach, and there's a good chance they're using soybean oil, I personally think that there's room to be makel and not to make a big deal to ask the, you know, what kind of oil are you using, because number one, there's a good argument to say that soybeans are not kitniot, and number two, there's a good argument to say that make kitniot, something that's coming out of kitniot, and not kitniot themselves. And number three, there's a very good argument to say that kitniot themselves really shouldn't be more machmir than wheat. And wheat, if it's baked first or cooked first, really doesn't become chametz. So too, in the processing of these, let's say, soybeans, if they're baked first or whatever, you know, the processing that they use heat, it really can't come to chimutz either. And putting those things together, so there's room to be makel. As an example, Rabbi Chansin said that the chayalim that are in the tzava, in the army, they use soybean oil, kashal pesach soybean oil, and he said that Ashkenazim, you know, could eat that without any problem. Lastly, a very important point
is Ashkenazi in the army or
Ashkenazi in the army. Ashkenazi in the army. In other words, he doesn't tell people Ashkenazim should buy soybean oil. There's very few people that would say that, but there are poskim. You know, Yeshal Milismoch even going that far. Another interesting issue is to what extent, or what is the halachic status of kitniot on Pesach in Tarovet? So we all know that generally there's a din of bittul barov or bittul b'shishim, and on Pesach we're machmir afilu be'elef when it comes to a Tarovet. But when it comes to kitniot, so the Trumat Hadeshen writes very clearly, and the Ramah quotes the Trumat Hadeshen, that even though the minag Ashkenaz is to be machmir by kitniot, he says the minag Ashkenaz lachmir ve'ein lishanot miu pashut de'ein osrim b'diavad im naflu betocha tafshil. If kitniot fell into a tafshil, it doesn't make it osur. V'chein mutar lehadlik b'shemanim hanasim mehem. You could use, you know, oil made out of kitniot. Ve'eino osrim im naflu. And you don't have to be like choshesh or worry if, oh, don't, you know, don't use the oil because maybe it'll fall into the food. You don't have to worry about those things. The person is allowed to leave the kitniot in the kitchen, and you don't have to be worried that, oh, maybe I'm going to eat from it. There's no isra of bal yirah by matzeh. In other words, there's no bal yirah by matzeh. There's no isra hana. You could feed kitniot to your dog. I remember when I was young, I used to go fishing with corn on Pesach. And there's a din of bittul. In other words, it's bottle. The question is it bottle barov? So the Mishnah Berurah and the Orach HaShulchan, the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Chok Yaakov, and this is how the Mishnah Berurah paskins, and the Orach HaShulchan as well, that kitniot are bottle barov. In other words, if you have 49% kitniot in this mixture, it's bottle. No, b'di'evit. Not l'chatchila. B'di'evit. It's bottle barov.
Mishnah Berurah
and who?
How much do you have to expect in oil?
There are some achronim that say that you need shishim, but again, the Orach HaShulchan and the Mishnah Berurah paskin that it's bata barov. Now, there's a rule, just a moment. There's a rule of ein mevatlim isur l'charchila. We don't go around and take an isur and dump it into a thing in order to be mevatle l'charchila. You don't do that. Okay? Rabbi Yitzchak HaChanan Spector, however, in his Ber Yitzchak comments, that when it comes to kitniot, before Pesach, they don't have a din of an isur. And therefore, he felt that it would be mutter to make a mixture, as long as it's 49% and not more of kitniot, to be mevatlit before Pesach in order to be able to eat it. In Israel, there are a lot of products that have kitniot in them. But most of these products are rov, not kitniot. Okay? And the question is, either following the Rav Yitzchak HaChanan Inspector's heter, or the fact that the companies, let's say, make it l'chachila for Svardim, and Svardim are the rov in Israel, and therefore it wouldn't be considered a situation of being mevatel isur l'chachila. Normally, if you went to be mevatel, intentionally mevatel isur l'chachila, there's a knas that says the bittel doesn't work. But here, it would work either because of Rav Yitzchak HaChanan Inspector, or because for Svardim, it's l'chachila mutter to eat, you know, straight, 100%. And therefore, there'd be a very good svar to allow it. Rav Yaakov Frankis in the Beis Medrash told me that Rav Dov Lior paskins that all these products, as long as it's not rov kitniot, are mutter for Ashkenazim to eat. I brought that to Rav Lichtenstein. You know, I pointed out this Mishnah Berurah to him and these different issues, and he says, "Oh, it's very, very interesting." He said, "I don't know anybody who's nohag like that." Okay, that was before I discovered that Rav Lior paskins like that also. Okay, in other words, what I'm trying to give you with all this information is I'm not telling you to go out and buy all the products that say on it, l'ochle kitniot dovad. No, generally, our minhag is not to do that. Rav Lior paskin, and he's, you know, logically, it makes a lot of sense, but we generally don't do that. What I'm trying to do is put in perspective, you know, if you go to a Sephardi's house, so don't eat the rice, okay? Or don't eat the beans or whatever else that you don't eat. But you don't have to worry about eating everything else that's there. Yeah.
Two questions. One is, what about corn? And two is
the minhag minhag nowadays
is not to eat corn.
Is not to eat
but
corn.
Based on what?
Minhag.
And then also based on the smock and. The three reasonings in the smock. Why is it that any, like let's say an oil, you're not afraid that the oil got mixed up with wheat oil because wheat oil doesn't really exist. So why do we still have kitniot?
No, again, the smock was explaining the swara of why there's such a minhag. According, you don't just take these swaras that he uses and then apply it to everything that you see. He's trying to explain. He's not being mechadesh more isur. He's explaining that's the minhag. What would the possible reason be? And he gives theories, but it doesn't mean that you take the chayadim thought. You would take any of those reasons and apply them to potatoes, etc.
Right, but then why? And what's the reasoning for oils and all that stuff?
Hmm.
What's the reasoning that oils are not allowed in?
Because they come from kitniot. Kitniot are usur, and therefore anything that comes out of the kitniot are usur. Mm-hmm. Yes. No, it's mutter to own, it's mutter to get hanah. You could feed your dog kitniot. You could use kitniot for any uses you want. There are some poskim that say, as an example, that you can't use paper plates on Shabbos because the paper plates are sometimes coated with cornstarch. Okay, or, right? I don't think a person should be mashmi for that at all. At all. You don't have to worry about that. You know, not being mechaven to it, and it's not always the starch, and I don't think you have to worry about that type of thing. Or I saw another post, a modern day posik say, you shouldn't use rubber gloves on Pesach because the inside of the rubber gloves, they make out of a powder that's made out, again, of cornstarch. You know, the powder that you find inside the rubber gloves, the surgical gloves. Okay? That you shouldn't use that because Shema, a little bit of that powder might fall into your food. That's against the Trumas Hadeshim, it's against the Ramah that said that you could use it to light your candles and you don't have to worry about having it on the table that Shema is going to fall into anything. Mufur said it's mutter. Yeah.
Svarim are the rove in Israel, why is there a concept of Minhag
HaMakom? I think because the Kehilot stayed separate, even though, in other words, each Kehilah had its own shul and its own Minhagim, there are advocates to what you're saying, to let's say make everybody into a nusach achir and unify everybody, but it hasn't caught on. Yeah.
Why isn't the whole idea about kicking out? Why isn't it like part of Akron where like some like more and more we're saying there's more reasons to be made for like nowadays they don't make all these products in the same places. They have each separate farm for every single product. Therefore, it's not really a mix. It's not like the hashash has all kind of gone away. What's the point in like, keeping this?
I don't know, but I don't think what you're saying is true. In other words, I don't think that these things are so separate. Quite often, you know, you're making cholent and you find, let's say, wheat kernels in the white beans bag, you know, from the packaging. It's not so simple that, you know, so posh that all these reasons are gone. Yeah?
Seeds that are not in any way similar to wheat, such as sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, is there any us around them?
Sunflower seeds, there's some that eat and some that don't. I know that there are Jews in England that use sunflower seed oil on Pesach. Can anybody corroborate that? Yes? And you hear that? They use sunflower seed, the Ashkenazi Jews use it on Pesach. Again, in Israel, it would never wash because the Haredim, you know. I don't eat sunflower seeds, but pumpkin seeds you could eat. Pumpkin seed, because I guess, I don't know, because it comes out from a pumpkin, I would imagine, you know. No one would say you can't eat an apple because it has a seed in it. Yeah?
Is there any issue with eating something which looks like bread?
Pardon me?
Is there any issue with eating something which looks like bread?
That looks like bread?
Yeah.
No. There's no issue. Yeah?
Can we apply, you say I have to go to a Sephardi, some of the Sephardi came over to the house, just don't eat the rice, but everything else.
Right, anything that you recognize physically as being...
Those the travel programs, like the hotels in Israel on Pesach, can we extend that to that?
I personally, in other words, if I was choosing where to go, in other words, if it's in your power to choose where to go, the answer is no, you shouldn't. You should only go to a place that's Makar and Kidneyot. Okay? But if you're somebody's guest, I think you could extend it, that if you're in somebody's guest and in the hotel, that you don't have to worry that the hotel might use soybean oil. Yeah.
You said the products in Israel, because in Israel it's real starting. Now, does that mean if the item is now exported to America, even though in America it's Rav Ashkenazim, it's still okay? Because it was produced in a country that was...
I think according to Rav Lior, the answer is yes. According to Rav Lior, again, Rav Lichtenstein just commented, I don't know anybody that does such, you know, something like that. But yeah.
The concept is where it's produced or where it's being used. Because if it's produced here, but purchased in America and used in America...
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. You're saying, let's say, if they're making, I don't know, pudding or all kinds of different things.
Right.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. That's true. And I guess a person would have to cheshbon the numbers in that respect. But again, that's the heter that again, I don't know how many people follow Rav Lior's heter in that situation. Yeah. Okay. We're done. Someone will take you down.